This is episode 380 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, April the 16th, 2012.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
This is an exciting day in the history of the NBN.
Copyright.gov is down. FBI.gov is next to go.
The world is in trouble. There is no Wikipedia.
Who here has an iPhone? Who here has a BlackBerry? Who here uses Gmail? Well, you're all screwed.
So we'll be monitoring this very closely. No one will pay for these rights if they can't find a way to make money off them.
Copyright is such a big issue. Legislation as 2006 is already outdated by the new technologies.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Today on the show, just as the dust settles on the latest iPad, it's time to wind up the rumour mills again, this time with the pending arrival of the next Apple iPhone, scheduled for around August, September, or October this year. And while on the subject of fruit, Apple has released a second flashback removal tool to help ripen those infected apples, of which there are some 10,000 in Australia. Also, as we touched on last week, there are troubled times ahead for Sony as they plan to shed some 10,000 jobs and cut TV production by 40%. Also, the next generation of TV screens with the new OLED technology are about to hit the market. Also today, Adam Turner takes a look at copyright and backing up your DVDs at home. There's the latest in gaming news with Lena Van Deventer, as well as the usual Oddspot gadget app and website of the week as well. First up, though, here's this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio News Desk with the well-travelled Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, the ACCC approves Foxtel's takeover of Austar. The launch of Apple's next iPhone is touted for October. Where to for Channel 10 after a damaging ratings slump? And Google's latest update to its Chrome web browser. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Australia's competition regulator, the ACCC, has approved Foxtel's $2 billion acquisition of regional pay TV operator Austar. The approval was granted subject to an 8-year restriction on future acquisitions by Foxtel, intended to foster competition in the pay TV and IPTV markets. Chairman of the ACCC, Mr. Rod Sims, on The World Today.
By trying to make the main popular channels non-exclusive, we think we have just improved the world in which future competitors will operate and improve competition going forward.
Foxtel's chief executive officer, Mr. Richard Freudenstein, told the ABC's PM program that the company was happy with the decision and the concessions that Foxtel had agreed to.
I think we're happy with the outcome. We think the acquisition of Austar will be a real benefit for our customers, for Austar customers. It'll help us build a bigger business and be able to continue to invest and innovate in driving our business forward. And we think the undertakings that we've come up with are very pro-competitive, but we'll back ourselves to compete based on the quality of our product and the exclusive content that we still have.
Austar should be integrated into Foxtel by the end of May, at which time it will cease trading on the Australian Securities Exchange. The current release of Apple's near-ubiquitous iPhone, the 4S, is set to be superseded in October, according to an executive at Apple's manufacturing plant, Foxconn. A number of websites, including BGR Media and respected technology website CNET, reported that Foxconn has received preliminary orders for Apple's so-called iPhone 5, which will launch in Q3 or Q4 this year. Apple Intelligence website 9to5Mac reported that Apple's currently testing a prototype of its next iPhone, which will include 1 GB of RAM and the latest dual-core A5X processor, which is the same chipset found in the latest iPad. In other Apple news, the company on Friday last week released a Java update and then a separate program to remove the so-called flashback Trojan, which has affected over 600,000 Macs worldwide. AppleInsider.com says the standalone program is meant to be used by all OS X Lion users who don't have Java already installed on their machines and includes the same code as the new Java update. Last week it was revealed a bogus Adobe Flash installer could automatically install itself on Mac machines without administrative authorization after the machine had visited an infected website. The malware reportedly harvests personal information and web browsing logs from infected machines. Australia's 10 network is asking itself where to from here after a damaging ratings dive and a sharp drop in half-yearly profit. In the 6 months to the end of February, Network 10's earnings have fallen 70% to just under $15 million. The problem appears to be poor programming, poor ratings, and advertisers leaving the network. Network 10's chief executive officer, Mr. James Warburton, spoke to analysts last week.
And whilst no member of the team at 10 feels in any way that losing a single viewer from our primary channel is ever acceptable, the reality is I continue to read about being embattled, about ratings collapses, struggling, all sorts of words.
Analysts say it will be difficult to make up recent ratings losses and that the network has relied too heavily for too long on the successful MasterChef program. A big push into news and current affairs last year with new programs like 6pm with George Negus was unsuccessful. And media analyst Mark McDonnell at BBY says Channel 10 has reduced its staff numbers by 12% in recent times. Network 10 has a number of upcoming programs for 2012, which it hopes will reverse the ratings downward spiral. New shows include The Shire, Being Lara Bingle, I Will Survive, Priscilla, Everybody Dance Now, Come Date With Me, and Don't Tell the Bride. And a new enhancement to Google's Chrome web browser allows users to access tabs already open on other devices. The latest beta release of Google Chrome provides an Other Devices option in the tab menu, which gives access to pages open in Google Chrome on other devices. Google says the feature will be rolled out progressively to beta channel participants over the next few weeks. I'm Dr. Ron, I'm back on the news desk, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Chocolate bunnies on the loose everywhere.
Yeah, speaking of chocolate bunnies, Lena.
Hi.
Andrew.
Yeah, things happen during the week.
But this is a photo of Halle Berry on your coffee.
It's amazing. Seriously. How many people do it though?
I know.
Generally, I've found that all network coverage maps are a work of fiction, and here's no exception.
Chocolate printers to go on sale after Easter.
Chocolate?
Chocolate printers.
Hang on. It's too much for me.
Well, you just avoid the head height level.
He said
Victory
both.
You're stealing my fans.
Victory is mine.
There's more games on it than my kids can actually possibly play in a whole year, I reckon. Yeah.
Does this mean we're one step closer to lickable wallpaper?
I tried to stand my phone up nice and neatly and
it didn't work.
Backfired at me and fell over and made a noise. Then Lena laughed and yeah.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Another show. All sorts of interesting things happening, but the big news for the week. Graham's joined us. Hi, Graham. How are you going?
Good, Andrew. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Thank you. The Rose Between Two Thorns.
Is that me?
Yeah, that's you.
Yay!
That's you. How are you going?
I'm Thorn. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, look, it's good. Thank you very much. It's interesting week, technically speaking. Nothing's gone wrong. That's always got to be a good sign, really, doesn't it?
Speak for yourself.
Oh, well, you know.
Yeah.
And who's this guy on the end next to you?
I'm the Tech Talk Radio Intrepid Explorer.
Ah, yay, is that who you are?
He's back.
I'm the Great Train Ronnery.
Aha.
That's one of Lena's.
No, it was Elroy's.
It was one of Elroy's.
Yeah, yep.
Hi, Elroy. Hey, I'm back. Look, here I am.
Where'd you be? Where'd you go?
Thanks for having me back. This is exciting, isn't it?
Extravaganza.
The extravaganza. Get it? Did you like that one?
I loved that one.
Should we go on?
Were you on a train called the Gan, by chance?
I was on a train called the Gan.
Well, it could have been an extravaganza.
No, it can't be the extravaganza because it's named after the Afghans.
Is it?
Yeah, that's where they get the name from.
Oh.
The Afghan Cameleers, who made the first sort of permanent trail up into the Red Centre.
Ah,
Not a thousand years ago.
Did they bring camels?
They did. Yes, they did. Oh. And then they used them and then they said, what are we going to do with these camels now? Oh, we'll just let them go. And now there's like a million camels roaming wild.
A million?
Yep.
Wow.
In the outback where there never used to be camels.
Ah.
That's impressive.
Do you know that? I've got some train statistics for you. This isn't a train spotters program, but I thought everyone would like to know. 3 days
if
and
you're offended by this, listen away now.
3 days and two nights. I've travelled about 7,500 kilometres by rail. I think I said in the Tech Talk newsletter, Graham couldn't think of anything worse.
No.
He's shaking his head, looking forlorn. The train's about 710 metres long.
Yeah.
Its average speed's 85 kilometres an hour with a top speed of 115 kilometres an hour.
Yeah.
And the Adelaide to Alice Springs leg has been around for a while, but Alice Springs to Darwin is only fairly recent. The train made its first inaugural journey to Darwin on the 1st of February 2004.
Oh.
So there you go. If you want to have a little bit more of a look at the train and more information about the trip that I took, you can go to greatsouthernrail.com.au. They've got all the information there.
So how did you go without having technology on such a long, slender, tubey device heading north?
Look, this is interesting. It's forced relaxation.
Did you have to talk to people without tweeting, emailing?
In RL.
RL?
Real life.
Oh, and you bumped into someone we knew too.
That was funny.
Yeah?
That was very funny. I think I spoke to you on the telephone, like not last week, the week before when I was up in Darwin.
Yep.
And yeah, I was sitting in the dining car, I think it was, and I hear from behind me, Dr. Ron. And I thought, oh no, who's this going
to
be?
Because it was on holiday.
It was your alias too, not your, yes.
Yes, yes. I thought it's someone from
being stalked.
The Tech Talk circle. And it was Mark Mayer and his lovely wife, Sandra.
Ah. Yeah, so heading north for a break too,
no heading north for a holiday as well. Yeah, oh, they were hopping off at Alice Springs.
Oh, good. Yeah. Hello, Mark, if you're listening. Must get him back on the show. Did you ask him?
I did, yes, yes. He said he'd be in touch. He's been busy being a magician.
Doing what he does.
He's been busy doing what he does and building a new house and all sorts of stuff.
Oh, well.
Yeah. But look, it was a great trip. Forced relaxation, to answer your question. There's no Wi-Fi on the train.
Yeah.
There's no mobile phone coverage.
Yeah.
It's like the radio studio here at the moment.
Yeah, it's very similar to the radio studio, actually. That's a good segue.
So internet's working for me.
You actually have mobile phone coverage when you're near a town, but once you get about 5 minutes out of a town, like Alice Springs or Catherine,
yeah,
you've got nothing for the next 6 hours, 8 hours.
So what did you do? Eat, drink, and be merry?
We read books, we ate, we drank, we were very merry.
Very merry.
You play cards, you read the paper.
Canasta?
You talk to people, canasta, cribbage.
I don't know. Card playing would be a skill which I think would be lost on a lot of people these days, don't
yes,
you think?
Yes, yes, it is.
I'd be tipping you were the youngest on the train too.
I was possibly the youngest if you don't count the crew on the
and
train.
Was it a holiday for your gums whilst you're out there? And the food on the
for
train?
For my gums. The food, they just ply you with food.
Yeah, nice and soft.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, you get here's your steak and it's been specially
yeah, that's it.
Pre-vitamized. Yeah. No, nothing like that.
Chewed for you.
No, not that bad.
Dear. Well, we did miss you.
Well, thank you.
We did.
In a good way or a bad way?
No, in a good way.
Oh, good, good.
In a good way. The chat has been quieter, though. I believe you did some... You caught up with some Tech Talk listeners as you travelled the length and breadth of land. You didn't catch up with the guys in Catherine.
I didn't. I wasn't in Catherine for quite long enough. It was a bit of a whistle stop there at Catherine just to refuel, and then we were moving on. So I couldn't catch up with the guys up there, unfortunately. But I have to say big hello to Primal and Joe and Alex... For
Yay.
Being the best, perfectest hosts while I was in Adelaide.
Okay.
And Joe's homemade lasagna is to die for.
Oh,
really?
Oh, it's great.
I haven't been to Adelaide physically for many years now. I must make my way over there at one stage again.
It's a lovely town. Really, really lovely town.
Well, I do ABC Radio over there.
Yeah. Yeah, you should go.
I should go.
Let everyone know you're going and have a pub night or something.
Go over when Avcon's on. That's when I'll be going over there.
Avcon.
Avcon's amazing.
Okay.
It's my favourite convention of the year.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I'll do that. I'll make an effort. When is it? When shall I put in my diary?
June, July, something around there. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's not far away. So we're going shortly, are we?
Yes.
Maybe we could do an OB there for the 400th show, Ron.
No.
What do you reckon?
More OBs.
Do it now.
Do you mean, Andrew, that when you're on ABC Radio in Adelaide, you don't actually go to Adelaide?
Shh. Don't tell anybody.
Sorry.
That's magic.
There's a lovely little box called the TARDIS just down the road here.
It's auto magical.
Yeah, and you get in there, and it's as TARDIS is, you know, dimension in space and time. You go in there and you come out anywhere. It's good like that.
What does TARDIS stand for?
It says everyone looking around the studio.
Do you want me to answer? Time
Please.
And relative dimensions in space.
There you go.
It's so hot right now, knowing that.
Really?
He's a Whovian.
I could play Nerd Alert now, but
he's
I won't.
Whovian.
An Whovian.
Very good.
How do you get this thing on the internet in here? What's going on?
I know.
Mine works.
Yeah, but...
You've got a Mac. It's the PC people who are struggling.
It just works.
Yeah, it just works. Can't argue with that.
Yes.
What's been going on? I've been listening to the program. You've had some good correspondence, some good segments. We've got lots of feedback from the previous couple of weeks as well in the mailbag.
Yeah?
Are
you going to read some out to
us? It's been a good read. I can read some out.
All right, would you want to? Should I play this?
Your say on Tech Talk Radio.
Come and have your say on Tech Talk Radio. We're all logged into the... Well, no, that's a lie.
I am now.
Still a lie. I'm not.
I'm on
you?
The chat.
Chat.techtalkradio.com.au is where you can come if you'd like to participate with us live.
There are lots of people there now. Can I send some shout-outs?
Please do.
Tommy Thailand's there. Or should I say Thailand Tommy? Warlock. Some guy in Sydney's there. HQ Man. Elroy. Gareth. Yak.
Has Warlock been demoted to some guy in Sydney?
No.
No?
Primal's there. Oh, there's some guy in Adelaide there too. Oh, dear. Let's not offend anyone, shall we? Off you go, Dr. Ron.
White salmon via the... Now, people have got their ranty pants on this week.
Oh, I read a bit of this one come through.
There's a lot of anger. Same. A lot of upset and confusion.
Is there? See? Look what happens when you go away.
Yeah, see?
You're going to blame it on me.
The natives are restless.
The natives are revolting. It's disgusting natives.
Disgusting natives.
White, I'm on the internet. White salmon via the contact form says, Graham, you're a snob.
Oh.
What?
What?
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Oh.
Should think not.
You have spoken glowingly on two shows over the years about noise isolating in-ear earphones. At the time...
I'm a headphone snob.
Yes, you're a headphone snob.
Quality snob.
Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine, yeah.
At the time, I had a set of Shure, S-H-U-R-E, is how you spell Shure, E2C phones that I paid close to $200 for, and I loved that I could hear things in the music that I never heard before. I didn't even need to crank up the volume. In the right situation, they are magnificent. They virtually eliminate road noise on long trips, and they're great for sitting down quietly to really concentrate on the sound. I believe you mentioned it was the closest you had to a direct connection of the music to the brain.
Yeah, except mine weren't even that expensive. Mine were somewhat less expensive than that, but they were Sennheisers.
Well, this is what White Sam wants to know. He says, personally, I like to tap them into my ear canal with a small rubber mallet until they touch together. Alas, wires fatigue and connections crackle over the years, so I'm looking for a replacement without spending too much money. I know you value music and are, shall we say, a little particular. You mentioned some other noise isolating options that you said were quite good. I recall might have been less than $100. Could I get your opinion on these, please? Many thanks, Alan, a.k.a. White Salmon in Washington.
Well, yeah, I think I've probably already said it. I got a pair of Sennheiser ones of that design. These are the in-ear ones, but they're the in-ear ones that completely seal off.
Are they the buds? They're the bud ones, and they pop
in. They're not the buds. They're not like... There's two types of in-ear earplug thing, earphone things. One of them is like the ones that come with your iPod, and they're the ones that are normally called buds, and they kind of sit in the outside of your ear, but they don't block your ear canal completely.
Mm-hmm.
These ones that this correspondent is... White Salmon is talking about is... these go inside your ear canal a little bit further, and they actually have a rubber thing that seals off so that you're completely isolated from outside sounds as well. But it also provides it with... because it has a known airspace that it's interacting with, it can provide extremely high-quality sound. Now, my ones of these are Sennheisers that I got a few years ago, or two or so years ago now, maybe. I'm not sure exactly. I think I paid around about the $100 mark, maybe less, for them.
Do you remember the model number, Graham?
I don't remember the model number. I would imagine even if I did, the model number would have changed. But
my... Because they're bringing out new models all the time, aren't they?
Yeah, they tend to do that, yeah. My general rule is to stick with Sennheisers, to be honest. But if
it's a lovely general rule,
yeah,
we should get them as sponsors.
Get them to throw headphones at us.
That wouldn't be a bad idea.
I wasn't thinking of that, but yeah, okay.
White Salmon, I hope that answers your question.
From Sennheisers, Washington, there you go.
Yeah, all the way from Washington. Primal via the TikTok radio contact form
and on the chat. Hello, Primal. He's there. He says greetings, Perthlings.
He says caution. Email contains fired up rant.
Uh-oh.
Oh, quick headphones
down. Traces of nuts.
More rant.
Get the hose.
Rant.
We should start a site.
Oh, God, I've had enough. Enough of poorly educated iFans who are simply repeating stuff they've already heard from other iFans about how bad Android is. Poor support, security issues with Android, blah, blah, blah. I've heard it all before. Enough already.
Can I
read the next sentence and you can interject?
Okay.
There's only a few iFans who I can accept criticism of the Android platform from, the lovely Lena being one of them. As her opinion is educated, she has made the choice to stick with the Apple platform for convenience of it just working, and the security that Apple's walled garden and sandboxing rules offers her in her data. And her data, do you wish to respond or do you wish me to continue?
He's sick of people judging other people's purchasing decisions.
Yes.
As am I. Hear, hear. So say we all.
What annoys me...
Stop caring what other people are buying. It's dumb.
That's it. Get on with your life.
Yep.
What annoys me is the latest batch of closet iFans who claim they're not iFans and they know about Android but have never had anything other than iPhones and who only know what Apple and the late, great Steve Jobs has told them. The short answer is yes, there are potential security issues with Android if you turn on the phone's ability to install from unknown sources and you root and ROM your phone. If you're doing this, the reality is you probably understand the risks and do everything in your power to minimise them.
And if I could say, it's no different at that level. It's no different to if you jailbreak your iPhone and start installing from unverified sources on it.
Yep.
Exactly.
It's exactly the same situation.
It's the same thing.
Conversely, he says, having an iOS developer account for work purposes, I can tell you in all honesty, the amount of access I have to your personal data, specifically photos and address book, makes me feel dirty. There are trade-offs between both platforms. I think the best summary I've heard of this is Adam on the 2nd of April show of Tech Talk, where he stated something along the lines of that you're essentially trading convenience on Android for security on iOS. As an Android enthusiast, I completely agree. Please, all I'm asking is that if you're going to make sweeping statements about a competing device, then make sure it's educated and you're prepared to back it up with facts and science.
So who's he addressing that to on the panel? Because you're all Android users. I'm an iPhone user, but he said that it wasn't me.
I've got a foot in both camps.
He said it wasn't you. He said he's annoyed by the latest batch of closet iFans, he describes them as.
And who is that?
I don't know, but there must be some out there at shops at strange hours of the mornings in queues waiting to buy things.
Mm.
/ rant, keep up the great work, folks, from Primal.
Thanks, Primal.
Mm.
Peter S., via direct email, says, Hi, Tech Talk Radio, still loving the show. I'm still loving it. For now, keep up the good work. Thanks, Peter. Regarding analog audio tape and the sticky shed syndrome.
Oh, we spoke about this the other day, didn't
we? Yeah, I mentioned it last week.
I remember this.
I'm still bitter and twisted about this, yes.
There is an Ampex approved temporary fix for this. At least if you've still got tape. When Ampex still existed.
Let me guess. You stick the tape in an oven for a little while.
Graham, if you've
seen
my show notes already.
I was driving down the 101 in California the other day between San Francisco and Palo Alto, and there's a really big Ampex sign on the freeway, on the right-hand side of the freeway as you drive down. So they do exist out there, but I don't know what they sell.
No, I think that's somebody who's bought the rights to the name.
Really?
That's
why would you do that after
Ampex
this?
Anymore.
Really? Oh, okay. Sorry. Ron?
The problem is caused by moisture absorption.
Yes, it is.
And the symptoms can be alleviated temporarily by slow baking the tape.
So I hear.
What are you telling me? You're going to put it in the oven for a while? Oh, come on.
The fix.
This is real, Andrew. This is real.
The fix is highly successful and can last for some days, long enough to dub off the tapes.
Yep.
There are all kinds of suggested methods. Do a web search on tape baking, but the basic recipe is 4 hours at 130 degrees Fahrenheit for quarter-inch tapes. My favourite is add salt to taste. My favourite and much used scheme is the hairdryer / meat thermometer / cardboard box variant, suggested way back by recording engineer and tinkerer Mike Rivers.
Yes.
You'd be doing this without the wife at home, wouldn't you? What are you doing, dear? You got mad. You're putting tape in the oven.
I don't have a wife. No, you don't put it in the actual oven because it gets a bit too hot.
Ah.
The temperature's got to be a little bit lower than your normal oven will do.
Can't you leave it on the back porch in a sunny day or something? Or is that too hot too?
I think that's why I suggested maybe the hairdryer.
I think you need a little bit of control over the situation. I've never been brave enough to do this, to be honest. I've known about this for a while. I've never been brave enough to actually do it.
This sounds great.
This is, and this is how they recover recordings off these tapes. They bake them and then they work well enough to play them once.
So is this off something like Ampex 456?
Yeah, exactly that stuff. Yes. Yeah? Yes.
Oh, I've probably got a roll of it or two at home. I've never used it.
I've got several rolls of quarter inch of it with audio recorded on it. Yeah.
Hey, sorry, Ron.
You've probably got 1 inch with video recorded on it.
Yeah, but it's Sony stuff.
Andrew, I don't know about videotapes. You could try it, but you'd have to have access to a working Ampex VPR machine.
Yeah, I got Ampex for VPR3. That's all right.
That the owner is willing to risk getting gummed up. Cheers, Peter.
Oh, that's all right. He's got plenty of upper drums. He can replace them easily.
That's all our correspondence, Andrew.
I was driving down the street on the way home the other night. And I saw something which I think you see very seldomly these days, where someone's ripped the cassette out of the car and there's tape all over the road.
Oh, you used to see that all the time.
It used to be everywhere, but it's really, really hard to see these days. You probably see the old broken CD that's been flung out in frustration or something. But no, wrapped around the local street pole with some oxide tape. I thought, wow, I don't even know a car which has a cassette player in it these days. Have you seen one recently? Must be old if it does.
I haven't had a cassette player in my car for a long time.
Mm. Why do you look at me strange, Graham?
I remember when that was a common sight.
It's funny, as a bit of a tech person, as you drive around the suburbs, the other great thing you notice is all the Foxtel cables being cut off halfway and sticky taped to a pole.
Yeah, Optus
cables. A lot of those do that. Yeah. Oh, and the Foxtel ones. So, hey, speaking of Foxtel, interesting news this week. You mentioned in the news there, Dr. Ron, about the... it's all starting this media shake-up thingy where... Obviously, we're seeing the amalgamation of a lot of individual companies, such as Austar and Foxtel. But I guess the interesting one is what the AFL are now doing with their online content.
Do tell.
Well, basically, they're starting up their own online TV channel because, obviously, the NBN's rolling out. Broadband's here to stay. And
were they listening when we told them to do that a few weeks ago?
Yeah, well, who knows? underneath the stadium there in Docklands, they have their new TV headquarters where they'll be
Hang on, that's Channel 7.
Yeah, exactly the same spot and just around the corner. It's where Dave Barham used to be, who used to run AFL Films. It's in that space. Anyway, what they've done is they've built TV studios. They've got lots of new edit suites, and you watch this space. AFL is going online. So when the new options come along to renew contracts with TV stations and pay TV providers, who knows what's going to happen?
Well, I hope they don't encroach on Optus's business, their successful business model.
What of thieverage?
Yeah.
I think this is part and parcel of the reason why they're doing what they're doing. Because they can have total control over their content.
I'm almost certain that'll be the reason.
So, and I don't know, but give it a couple of years, maybe 2, 3, 5 years down the track when all the rights are done. There might be a ballot. Which of you guys broadcasters want to run this game? Give us highest bid, and they might give a feed to it or something like that. But it just goes to show what's happening in the world of free-to-air television. And then add to that the fact that the Foxtel chief executive, Mr. I can't think of his name, but you said it in the news.
I did. His name is Richard Freudenstein.
That's him. Mr. Freudenstein came out about 2 or 3 weeks back in the Australian newspaper saying that Foxtel's business model is purely supported by AFL subscribers. Which, without those, the business would become unsustainable.
They'd be out of business.
Yeah. So we're looking at that at the moment, as well as what happened with poor old Channel 10 during the course of last week.
Channel 10, what's happened? There's 70% dive in profits.
Yeah.
In the last half-yearly period.
So yeah. So this is the beginning of the change of direction of how we're going to get our content.
In the 6 months to February, to the end of Feb.
Yeah. Well, you look at a lot of under 40-year-old people, and I think in the latest Oztam ratings, if you look at it broken down on demographics, those people watch around about 11 minutes of free-to-air television a day. Now, go back a few years, I reckon that'd be a damn sight higher than that, but this is where it's all happening. People are going online, they're looking at digitally delivered content and relying on those platforms for their news and current affairs and keeping in touch with their friends down the road, around the street, around the world. Mm.
And the free-to-air networks have done this to themselves, of course.
That was my next statement.
Yeah.
They've trained us to go online, haven't they, Graham? They've trained us to go and look on-demand video because of the fact...
They've shown us again and again and again how little respect they've got for us and how little they value our time and our attention. And they've basically made us feel like that's the last place where we want to be.
Mm. And, of course, don't forget, come the end of this year, being 2012... we have an open platform because all analog TV gets turned off. So there's no such thing as a primary channel anymore. So there's no excuse for the networks to say, but that's a secondary channel. You know, channel.
They can put whatever they like on any channel.
Channel 10, channel 11, channel 12, I think they've got, 1HD. It all becomes primary channels.
Yeah. So you mean that they might actually be able to put some of their mainstream major flagship programs that are made in high definition on a high definition channel and show them to us in high definition?
They won't do that. I walked past the telly. Won't.
And even if they did, it would be too little too late.
I walked past the telly the other night. My kids had Dancing with Something or Other on Channel 7 or whatever it's called.
Anyway, Dancing with the Buzzcocks or something.
Something like that. Mm. And I looked at the quality of it. And in a day and era where we're supposed to be going high definition, the latest and greatest in really good quality pictures and sound, gee whiz.
Disappointing?
Maybe I walked too close to the Bravia on the way through. I don't know. But it was noisy. It was ringy. Like it looked like it was coming from the moon in the 1960s. It was just...
Looked like it came off one of your Ampex tapes that had been through the oven.
That's what it is. And they're running it off a C-format one-inch machine with old Ampex tapes. Yeah, that'll be it. Anyway... It's things are going to change. I don't know when. Well, actually, I do know when. Sooner than later. But it's very going to be very much an interesting space for media. And, of course, you've got radio to throw into the mix as well there too. I think radio's settled down a bit now.
Radio's radio, yeah.
Yeah. The great thing
radio's
about...
Radio's been through all its revolutions and changes, and it's, yeah, it's alive and well.
Yeah.
And will be as long as we drive cars.
Well, exactly. But the next thing, which I'll be interesting, the next revolution, because I think we overstepped DAB. DAB's like digital broadcasting, you know, DAB Plus that we have. I've got a receiver at work, and it's just treated like a tranny. Like, we just turn it on because it was just, I bought one. But I reckon in the car, you watch, it'll overstep that, and we'll plug our internet thingies in, and we'll get audio streamed to us.
Will?
Yeah.
We do already.
I know, but... Some of us do, yeah, but don't you think the day will come where you buy your latest CD player and MP3 player, or actually CD player is probably not long for the world either, are they?
No.
And you put your SIM card in it?
Maybe, not sure.
And then if you travel interstate,
why would you bother? It's all built into your phone already.
Well, yeah, you could pull it straight in off your mobile network, couldn't you?
Yeah.
And Bluetooth it in that way. But if you, I just think, people like having a car radio, pop your SIM in and there it is, done. You buy your, load it up with a couple of gig of bandwidth and off you go. And when the radio stops working, you log in.
The thing is, though, radio's got a couple of things that don't sort of fit well with that. And one is that, particularly in Australia, one out of every three radios or one out of every, a lot of radios are going to have cricket coming out of it.
Cricket?
Okay.
Or footy.
Live sports.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And
oh,
news is the other thing.
Oh, sorry.
Tumbleweed next.
Yeah, sorry, I've thrown him now. Sorry, Graham.
News is the other thing that's good on radio.
It's great. So, I love it.
Yeah, having the radio in
and talk back, because that really razzes people up. And you get some feisty conversations.
No, we can do without that.
Oh.
Yeah, we can do without talk back.
You can get in our studio.
Because people are dumb. But news, definitely. News.
People are dumb.
These are the things.
I'd like to apologise to our listeners now if you've taken offence.
Oh, not our people.
No.
Not our people. No, news is definitely something the radio is good for, especially in emergency situations.
Yeah. But it would be nice to be able to drive around Melbourne and listen to the cricket in summer or the football in winter on the radio. Without having all that racket from the dreadful trams
going, oh, the bzzz.
Buzzing noises over the top of
now
it all.
You're talking Melbourne-centric.
And that would...
But it happens in other states too and in other regions.
For other reasons, yes.
Yeah, because you drive too close to those big power lines and stuff like that. You know,
yep, all those sorts of things, yeah.
Or you get too close to the telemachine and that interferes with...
Yeah, that's where your digital radio might still have its place into the future. I think that side of things hasn't settled down yet. But I think the place of radio... Doing that job of the...
I think radio's got stronger in recent years, don't you?
I'm sure it has, yeah. Those things of live sports, live news, that sort of stuff is as strong as ever.
I've been trying to find a clock radio, an alarm clock.
Yeah, go to the local white goods shop, they have them.
They don't. You can't buy them. The only ones you can buy are like $780 and they're a complete iPhone dock. Yep. Alarm clock, stereo, lounge room solution.
Can someone send us a clock radio for Dr. Ron, please?
Please do. Or just send me a link at the least.
See me after the show. I've got some.
Really? All I want to do is just spend $100 and
$100 for a
$100. Might be a little bit more than that, but I'll get you one. It'll have an iPod dock.
Yeah.
It'll have digital radio and a clock and an alarm.
Oh, you want digital radio? Digital radio?
Yeah. I'll sort you out, yeah.
All right, cool. That'd be good. Because I went into a yellow and black electrical...
Don't buy that sort of stuff from them.
But it was just incredibly expensive and the range was so limited.
Yeah, no.
Right. Good. See, I'll talk to Graham.
So you appealed on the radio. Look how well radio works. It's an instantaneous gratification there, really. The other thing I was going to talk to, I know we're digressing here, but it's all to do with tech. Music and compact discs and... music producers and all that sort of stuff.
What's a compact disc?
Yeah, good. I'm glad you asked that. The order in which tracks, and I'm saying this because I saw a really great television program on BBC4 the other night about classic hits or classic albums, it was called. The guys agonise over the track order.
Oh, yeah.
To put what track into what, you know, what side and the vinyl. I learned something about vinyl too, which I'll talk to you about in a sec. But they agonise over the track order on a CD. Compact disc. That's the optical thing you put in your car, Lena. You've seen them?
Yep.
You probably get game data.
Coasters.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Kids love them. They scratch them. They turn them into frisbees and they never play again.
Oh, they're those things that games are on.
Yeah, that's them.
Cool, cool, cool.
Yeah. Anyway, they agonise over the track order. But nowadays with digital downloads, that's all gone. People yes. just download a thing, sort it in the order that they want and put it online. So, you know, it's just technology's just changing the way we consume music in that regard too, which I hadn't really thought of the other night.
But there is still... They do still bring out the album with the tracks in order, and you can usually buy the album as a complete album from iTunes or wherever.
Yep.
Yep, and you can still play them in order if you want to.
If you want to.
Yeah.
And the other thing I learnt the other night, apart from the fact, which I knew, was only you get 22 minutes 30 maximum on a piece of vinyl, the old records.
Yes.
Now, do you know what that is, Lena?
Yes.
Oh, good. Hang on. How can you know what vinyl is and not a CD?
Like the tiles
on the... I was being facetious. I know what a CD is.
I'm being facetious too.
You better.
The thing is, Lena thinks that a vinyl record is one of those things that you use when you're being a DJ to go make noises.
Wicker, wicker, wicker.
Those noises.
No, no. I've got a vinyl album.
Have you?
Yes.
One.
Judy Garland live at Carnegie Hall. I do.
We'll have to get it out and play it during the break.
It's amazing.
Well, there's a record player here in the studio. We could do that. Bring it in one night.
We'd have an LP of the week section down at the end of the...
Oh, yeah,
yeah. That'd be good because I actually don't have a record player. So I have a record, but not a record player.
Oh, that's all right.
I'm a hipster.
The one thing I learned
about
thing
you learned,
vinyl yes. is yes. that the bass or the deepness, you know how the purity of the guys love the sound of vinyl?
Yeah.
Well, it's the actual depth of the groove in the vinyl determines the colour and the quality of the bass.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't know that. Hmm. You probably did, being an audiophile.
I... know someone who, I presume he's still got it, used to have a vinyl recording of a piece of music known as the 1812 Overture.
Ooh.
Which Dr. Ron probably can tell us a little bit more about.
It's the canon one. It's
by Tchaikovsky.
By Tchaikovsky.
And who? What did you say?
Dostoevsky.
By, yeah.
No. And this was a very high quality recording that included the canons as required in the score, and they had this special section of the recording on that they had specially arranged for the way it was, the track, the groove was arranged in the disc, and you could see this huge
big
deflection
hole
in the groove, and this specially widely spaced grooves where they had the cannon go off.
Yeah,
that so it was an extraordinary looking record.
Wow, it's pretty impressive when you think about it. Now we're just all ones and zeros, but back then it was a skill. It was an art form.
Oh, yes.
22. And you interacted with them all because halfway through the record, you had to go and turn it over.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Admittedly, with CDs, you just change the CD, but that's on a double CD type sort of thing. But no, the records, you get 22 minutes, you had to go turn it over.
Yep.
Is that all you get in LP, is it? 22 minutes?
And the quality, quality is different at the outside edge to the inside edge because the linear speed is different.
Yeah, and all the math that went into that.
Yeah. Because It still goes round in the same amount of time, but the groove is longer around the outside than around the inside, so you get much higher quality on the track one than you do on track five.
See, the modern generation in the chat at the moment, Bluetooth doesn't load playlists. Yeah, well, there you go. Says it all, doesn't it? Chat.techtalkradio.com.au. What'd you say, Ron?
Am I right in saying that optical discs that we use today, like CDs, DVDs, Blu-ray discs, they read from the centre outwards?
That's right, yes.
So sort of the opposite to what we're used to...
And they read at a constant linear speed. So that
they speed up depending where they're reading. They speed, yeah, so the speed,
they're,
don't they?
They're spinning at different speeds when they're reading the centre to when they're reading the outside to keep the actual data under the head moving at the same rate.
I never considered that.
Mm.
Yeah.
You learn all sorts of stuff,
which is
program,
the opposite to what records do. A vinyl, gramophone record.
Because the speed's constant, isn't it?
That rotates at a constant speed, so the linear speed changes.
So how did that make a 45? And I mean, comparing that to a 33.
Yes.
A 45 obviously travelled faster. What was the benefit of the faster speed in vinyl?
Better quality.
I would have guessed. But is that really the reason? Because I'm no vinyl expert, as you can tell. Sorry, I don't mean to put you on the spot there, Graham, but I just thought you might have... off the cuff, known that what the difference is. And then they had the 78s, remember them?
Well, yeah, 78s were different again, and they had that because of the materials weren't as good, the rotational speed was faster to be able to get sufficient quality sound out of them to be able to hear what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then the materials got better, so the speeds could get slower. The interesting thing about 45s is that they were singles,
for the most part.
Mm.
So you have your main track releases a single on a 45, and that would be put in a jukebox. And the jukebox would be set up without any external controls other than the slot for the money and the buttons to select which track. And the volume was fixed. The gain was fixed. So there was all this competition between different record producers to make the 45s louder than the competition's 45s, so that it sounded better, sounded louder on the jukebox.
And more people would play that on the jukebox.
Isn't that great?
So they would, stretch things to their absolute limit to record as loudly as possible on the disc.
Wow. There you go. So you learn something every day. Now, if this was the ABC, you'd have a light up. The switchboard would have lit up with all the people ringing up to talk about.
And to tell me that I'm wrong. You forgot about this. Like yes.
Yeah. All right. We are Tech Talk Radio. It's time for a break. We're going to play some music off one of these digital thingies. So stick with us and we'll be back with more after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, what does this button do? Hello, everybody.
But I buck the trend on the hive mind that is Tech Talk Radio.
Which is patently absurd.
It is absurd, exactly right.
But anyway, my point is...
Moving along.
My point is...
And why do you have to change the phone number?
That's a good question, Dr. Ron. Why?
If they're that clueless, they should not be answering the phone.
I can't see a blue tin. I can't see a blue tin.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio, it's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yes. Sorry, what are you doing, Dr. Ron?
Nothing. Sorry, face the front.
He's playing with the microphone.
Dear, you're the one that does that.
Sorted.
Oh, yeah, good.
Sorted.
Rumours are around again because you go from iPad to iPhone to iPad to iPhone. And now it's the iPhone's turn again. We've just had a new iPad come out.
The iPhone 5.
The iPhone 5.
I want to buy the iPhone 5.
Rumoured for October or third quarter or fourth quarter or sometime in the not-too-distant future.
We popped a little bit about it in the news, I think.
Yeah, there was a little bit. This is according to the next generation. It's going to be slimmer than the iPhone 4 and the 4S model. It may feature a quad mode chipset that will work across all 3G and 4G LTE networks, but maybe not in Australia because, as Apple have found out in the courts, their iPad is not compatible with our Telstra's 4G networks. They're the only one that run it at the moment. Nobody else has it just yet.
It's rumoured to have the new processor that's in the iPad.
Well, yes.
In the iPad 3, which we can't say iPad 3.
We can't, the iPad.
Mm.
What are you holding there in your hand, Lena? Is that the iPad or the iPad 2 or the iPad 1.5 or the iPad 1?
iPad 2.
The iPad 2.
Yes.
No urge to go and splash out and upgrade?
No, not really.
Yeah.
No. It does everything I want it to do.
Well,
and I don't think there's much of a jump between this one and the next one. So
we put your iPad beside my Android tablet today, didn't we?
We did.
The size is very, very, very similar.
It is, yeah. That was
What's
only
the screen like, though?
The tiniest was what we were looking at,
mine
wasn't
it? Mine was... Oh, you mean to look at? Or
yeah.
The there's not this Kogan thing you've got.
Yeah.
Oh.
Mine was ace.
Yeah.
But Lena's was about 100 times better.
Your Kogan screen was a little tiny bit bigger.
Yeah.
Hey, what are you running on that now? Are you still running...
Oh, it's the old horrible version of Android that thinks it's a telephone.
When you swipe
version
it,
2.
When you swipe it goes chug, 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 chug. Instead of just moving.
You can hear it.
You're being kind. It's not that fast.
Yeah, no.
Gingerbread, I think, is the version it's running, yeah.
Oh, so it's version 3.
2.3.
Oh, is that gingerbread, is it? I lose track. I loaded up Ice Cream Sandwich on my iPhone,
during
the course of the week.
We have to talk. We've spoken at length already over this last week,
we
haven't interrogated you about Ice Cream Sandwich. You've got that on your HTC Desire.
Yes, yes. The mod site that we had, the you can
basically, for those of you who are not familiar with this, if you want to, you can upgrade your phone without having to wait for a telco to let you do it. It involves, in the Android world, rooting the phone, or involves in the
which means obtaining road, root access to the phone.
Yeah, which basically means the level that the manufacturers and the telcos don't want you to get to, you can get to, so that you can put a new operating system. Like, it looks like upgrading from one OS on your computer at home to another. It lets you do that. Anyway, no, I did the. I found a mod on the site which looked reasonably good for Ice Cream Sandwich 404, and loaded it up on one of my test bed Android phones that I had, one of the spare HTCs, and it went really well.
That's good.
It's quite good. So then I thought I'd roll it out on my production model, and it's been good. I've been using it ever since. There's a few new changes in it. Things have changed a bit faster. The gadgets are widgets are a tad different, but nonetheless, it's like all new operating systems. You just got to get used to it.
The site that Andrew's talking about is www.romsau.com, roms-au.com.
That's the one. Mm. And you can find it there and download it if you've got a desire and you want to play with it. Get rid of all the yucky telephone company branding too that you tend to get on the Android devices, which have never found its way on the Apple devices, which is really good. But, you know, as I sort of alluded to earlier on the show too, like I've bought a 3GS when they came out, the iPhone, and then I moved on to the Android, and I'll probably try the iPhone out again because you just toggle between brands and compare the two.
For what, for the time being, we will call the iPhone 5.
Yeah, when that comes out, it might be worth something to have a play with come the end of the year when it comes out or something like that, see how it goes. But they're all pretty good, these phones. It depends on what colour your blood is, whether it's green or red, really, doesn't it? So anyway,
I've got a problem with my HTC Desire at the moment.
Ruh-roh.
What's that problem, or shouldn't we ask?
I think that the micro SD card, little memory card in it, has become corrupt.
Can't you format it?
I haven't tried yet. I need to format it. That's definitely what I need to do, but I'm just trying to get as much data off it as I can before I format it. The symptoms are that when I start the phone, there are applications that are installed on that micro SD card, and there are shortcuts that I've got on my Android desktop. For example, Facebook application, for example, and if I press the shortcut, it says this application is not installed, and three or four applications just will not work, and I know they're installed. If I try to use the camera actually starts, but I get an error message in the camera application saying you need to have an SD card mounted or installed for the camera application to work.
Oh, yeah, that's a telltale sign.
Yeah, it is. I've taken the card out and I've reseated it. I've
put a new one
unmounted and mounted the card. Yeah, I bought a new one as well. If it's a faulty card, I'll just drop a new one in it. But it's just frustrating. When you turn the phone off and on again, the fault moves. So Facebook application will start working, but another application will stop working. It's very frustrating. I just need 5 minutes to scratch myself, and I'll fix it. But
that's good telltale sign, because I know that when you fill your memory up, those phones behave in a rather...
They do. You have to leave a minimum amount of storage space available for the phone to actually work.
Mm. All right, there you go. Now, the flashback Trojan, which is doing the rounds on the Mac world too at the moment, apparently in Australia, there's been around about 10,000 infections on it. Now,
out of about 600,000 worldwide, reported?
Yeah, now this is about a bot, one of those little droidy, you know, zombie bot type sort of things that becomes infected. Now, Graham, do you know much about what the deal is with this little infection, this Trojan that's doing the rounds? We touched briefly on it last week, but I noticed that Apple put out a second patch to try and get rid of it off some machines.
Yeah, I haven't got all the information about that, mainly because I don't have a Mac. So,
I thought you might have heard a few things around the traps and stuff like that.
Haven't heard that. I've heard things that Apple haven't been endearing themselves to the security research community over this issue.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Yeah, well, I think there's always been this belief that it'll never happen to us, and at this sort of and time around, it seems to have happened to the Apple faithful. So it snuck in. Now, it was something in Java, I believe.
Apple has released a second program. You're right, Andrew. The website appleinsider.com says the standalone program is meant to be used by all OS X Lion users who don't have Java already installed on their machines. It includes code as the new Java update.
Okay, so this is an installer with the patch to install Java if you haven't got it already.
That's my reading.
Whereas the previous thing that they'd released was a patch for people who already had Java.
Yes.
Okay, so So now instead of having to load up Java and then load the patch, you've got an installer that's got it already patched.
That's it.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Thanks for clearing that up.
Cool.
Dr. Ron.
No problems.
Now, they released that last Friday, I think, too, the little patch that came out to fix all that sort of stuff up, which, does the deed, cleans it all up. So, but I wonder if this is going to be the beginning of it.
Well, that doesn't clean anything up. What that does is that prevents the
exploit from happening.
That particular exploit, yeah. But this Trojan has been known to mutate in the past, that the people that wrote it have written new versions to take advantage of new exploits. So it might not necessarily be the end of it.
All right, we'll wait and see what happens there. But it certainly opens up the possibilities that, I was always of the firm belief that the PC market would always be targeted because of its saturation. But now with the iOS's and,
well, if nothing else, there's
and
actually
the Mac market's in increasing its penetration into the market, maybe they're becoming susceptible to these same type of opportunistic hacks.
Yes, if nothing else, this event is a proof of concept that you can assemble a significant botnet using Mac machines. They got 600,000 machines. That's not an insignificant botnet to be able to control.
No. And speaking of botnets, remember a couple of weeks back we talked about the July the 9th deadline for the FBI's DNS server because of the...
Oh, yeah, because of the... Yeah, that was the DNS changer malware, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's well and truly entrenched. That's disappeared off the mainstream, but that'll be coming up shortly too. So it'd be interesting to see. And even the... was it ACMA? He built a web page to see if you had that nasty thing inflicted on your website too. So that's something else to look forward to. So there's a fair bit of it around at the moment. Keep yourself clean, guys. Goodness me. Microsoft kicks off a 2-year XP countdown. Is this the sign of the times? We're moving away from the Windows XP.
Oh, my.
Sorry about that. All right, who owns us all a slab?
Graham again.
Me. Graham.
Yay.
Now, whoever's ringing me from that number.
Shame them. Read the number out on air.
Yeah, shame them.
No, I'd better not.
They should.
They should buy the beer.
Yeah.
They should know you're on the radio at this time.
They should.
Oh, dear. Anyway, what was I saying? Yeah, Microsoft has reminded firms still running the Windows XP operating system that it will end support for the operating system on April 8th, 2014, 2 years away.
Oh, so we're stuck with it for another 2 years.
No, support. They finished up with Vista the other day. Well, yeah, whilst you were away, they put the nail in the coffin for Vista.
That's good.
Finally.
But people can legitimately run it for another 2 years.
Well, they're going to support it for another 2 years, which I think means, Graham, that they bring out patches and security updates. Is that right?
I think they're only doing security patches for it now. They're not doing any functionality patches for it.
Oh, okay. Because there's still a lot of people out there with XP on their machines. I think at least one of our, or two of our machines at home run XP.
I've got it on something. Yeah. I can't remember what.
Because it was a very successful operating system, so.
It was.
Better
it was
than Vista.
Widely used. Yeah.
Anyway, well, this warning was targeted at organisations that are fairly recalcitrant type organisations that don't like moving forward and catching with the times. Because we're going to get Windows 8 coming out in the next little bit. I know you speak highly of it, Lena.
Ugh, hate it.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it another shot, though.
Oh, you tried it, did you? Did you download it and give it a zing, did you?
The consumer preview thing. Yeah,
no, I haven't gone that far yet. I tried loading one of the releases up on a machine that I had, but I didn't have the right spec or something, so it said, go away, don't bother me. So,
just as well.
I haven't actually got around to loading it up just yet. Oh, really?
I hate it. Really hate it.
Oh, okay. Well, according to Windows Blog, if you still have some PCs running Windows XP and Office 2003 in your organization, now would be a good time to start migrating them to Windows 7 and Office 2010.
Yep.
So, 2003, that was a long time ago. That was nearly 10 years ago. But I guess people are still using that sort of software, aren't they?
I don't know.
Do you come across many in your day-to-day job?
Old versions?
How far back do you reckon they'd go? 2003, is that sort of the earliest you'd see you come across?
Yeah, no one's running anything earlier than XP anymore, but yeah, there's still lots of XP out there.
Yeah.
You don't see Windows 2000 machines anymore?
No.
3.11?
No.
Do you remember Windows Me? Millennium Edition?
Yeah, Windows ME, yeah.
That was almost as successful as Vista.
I was about to say.
I had that on my school laptop in year 12. Year 11 and year 12. Yep. That was bad.
Windows ME.
Year 12 was bad or ME was bad?
Both.
Pick one, Dr.
Both didn't do what they were intended.
What happened in year 12 that didn't go right?
I don't learn well. I has the dumb. No. Everything was fine. But yeah, I used Windows ME on my Toshiba laptop when I was in high school.
You had a Toshi laptop.
I did.
I had a Toshi for a long time.
It was good.
Yeah, they were good machines back in the day.
Till the battery burnt my leg. Allegedly. Allegedly.
Mm.
Toshiba products are great. I'm not sledging anyone.
No, no. They're the opinions of your...
They're called notebooks for a reason, not laptops anymore.
Oh, okay.
Don't put them on your lap.
Knee warmers.
Swanee in our chat room says the Victorian government agency he works for is still LXP and Office 2003. I swear our next upgrade will probably be to Vista.
Oh, no. No, they've stopped supporting that. They can't upgrade to an unsupported platform, surely.
Swanee, I feel your pain. I feel your pain.
Yeah, very good.
No, everybody's moving from Windows XP to Windows 7. There's a big push for it in the corporate world at the moment.
So. It's out there. It's solid. Yeah. It's reliable. Works beautifully with Server 2008 and, I believe, 2011 as well. So, yeah, it just talks nice.
Yeah.
It's good. Hewlett-Packard managed to ship some switches. You know, the little boxes that you can plug lots of computers into so that they all talk to the one network?
Network switches, not light switches.
No, network switches, yes. The ProCurve 5400 ZL, if you've got one of those in your office.
Yeah, lots of people will. Yeah,
be careful.
Yeah, they come complete with malware-infected compact flash cards.
Good work,
fantastic.
HP.
Fantastic. Well done, HP.
How's the quality control?
So,
how's the serenity?
Yeah, I was going to say that.
I want to know who the employee was who snuck that one in under the radar. Oh. It'd be a bit of a witch's hunt on now, I would
imagine.
Might
not have been an employee, but it certainly raises quality control issues.
Yeah, yeah. So, if you've got one of those in the office, the 5400 ProCurve ZL switches, do go and scan it with something. Take the flash card out of it. What are you doing a flash card with a switch, Graham? I thought they were pretty much dumb animals, but obviously it's for configuration purposes, I assume.
Yeah, presumably.
Yeah, so you can say, oh, I want to dedicate this channel to this machine, give it more bandwidth or more priority over other machines, stuff like that. Is that what you do it for in a switch?
I guess so.
Yeah, all right. Speculation. It's everything. In other news, Sydney and Melbourne make the top 25 startup hubs. Not very good, is it, for doing startups for tech and all that sort of stuff?
They make the top 25.
Yeah.
Does that mean that they're
good.
They're
good
number 24
to, good
and 25?
Good place to come and start up. Like, obviously, Silicon Valley and Palo Alto and, you know, those sort of parts of the world over there would be right up there in the rankings. But apparently, Sydney and Melbourne make to top 25. Is that good? Gaming's big, isn't it? What are we in the gaming side of things, Lena?
What do you mean? Like, in terms of how many developers we've got?
Well, no, as a spot for startups, if you've got money to burn and you want to come and develop a new game or something like that, would Melbourne or Sydney be on the priority list?
Melbourne would be better than Sydney.
Yeah? But are we up there in respect to the rest of the world?
If you're looking at the whole world, where would you prefer to...
Oh, low.
Oh, really?
Real low.
Oh.
There's not many tax breaks and things here for indie developers. Canada's probably your best bet. Vancouver is and around the Canada area is probably the best for startups because the government just throws money at you for making games over there.
Like they used to for people making television up there.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, Australia's two larger cities fall well behind traditional homes of technology, such as we mentioned, Silicon Valley, and even New York City. These hubs were ahead of London, Toronto, and Israel's second largest city, Tel Aviv.
Israel's a long way up in the telecommunications industry as well.
A lot
of stuff comes out of Israel.
I think that's sort of part of the world. They made the smart chips for pay TV for Europe, which got the Murdochs into trouble the other day. I think that's where there was a link back through.
I think it's also where Murdoch's crack security team was based.
NDS. Yes, yes, exactly right. It was.
I was speculating, saying, if you say you're in the top 25, then the odds are you're going to be positioned 24 and 25.
Yeah, because if you were
in the top
that's right. You'd say you're in the top five.
I've just looked at the article. The positions were Sydney 21, Melbourne 22. So they could say they're in the top 22.
Yeah, but then that's really
obvious.
Yeah,
they've got around it.
they want to draw people's attention to that.
That's right.
Yes.
Oh, dear. So, all right, well, there you go. And gaming's
still pretty good.
Gaming's not in that caliber.
The list.
For Australia or any... Because I thought you said Australia was doing...
There's
well
a very before. Vibrant development community here.
Yeah.
But the government hasn't really jumped on that yet to really knock it out of the park, so to speak. There's a few funding bodies and stuff you can get access to taxpayer money, but not a lot. So...
Okay.
The government hasn't jumped on the bandwagon to knock it out of the park. Is that what you said?
Yes, I'm mixing my metaphors.
Just a bit.
You can't expect sleeping dogs to lie if you let the cat out of the bag.
Exactly. If you, for example, like all of the funding bodies you apply to if you're making a game are generally film funding bodies.
Oh, like Screen Victoria.
Yeah, Screen Australia and Film Victoria.
Yeah, yeah.
Also Screen Victoria, Screen Victoria. If you want to put them both together. Yeah.
See, like, there's a new startup, Screen Victoria.
So they're
26.
Yeah, gaming doesn't have its own funding body that you can apply to in Australia that I know of.
All right. So don't start up games here in Australia.
No, do it.
Oh, change the rules. For
goodness sake, do it. Okay, yes, be the change you want to see. Do it more and then it'll happen. Don't say game changer when talking about games. I hate that. I hate it so much. That's the second time today you've done it.
It is.
It would be one of the industries that would be high on the list to benefit from the NBN.
Oh, yes. Yeah, wouldn't it?
It's something that perhaps the government should look at once the NBN project is in full flight.
Yes, for all sorts of reasons. But anyway, we move on to other areas. While we're talking about security and issues before, BlackBerry tops the Enterprise Mobile Security Survey. Surprise, surprise. Probably because not many people have got them anymore, so...
And you can't load apps on them.
But a security vendor, Microtrend, has named BlackBerry 7 the most secure mobile operating system for enterprise users. And that's above Apple's iOS, Windows, and Android platforms. So if you've got a BlackBerry device, I think they're getting out of the personal space now, BlackBerry, and they're really focusing on their core business, which is the
enterprise. Well, it's where their strength's always been, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Do you know many people, or do you come across many people, Graham, in your day-to-day who use BlackBerries?
Not a great many, no.
Mm.
No, I had, yeah.
I only know one person who Dr. Ron knows who has also been on Tech Talk Radio who runs a BlackBerry, Susan McLean. She's got one. That's the only person I know who's got a BlackBerry amongst a lot of acquaintances, clients, and others down the track.
Hmm. Yeah, we had one at one of my customers who insisted on having BlackBerry support put on the system and bought his BlackBerry and then left the organisation 3 weeks later.
Oh, really?
So, that was really helpful.
Oh, okay.
So
you spend all that time and effort installing the collaboration server.
BlackBerry Enterprise server, yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, that was really rewarding work. I could have throttled him for that. And I know one person personally who's got a BlackBerry, but she's American, so that's more...
Well, that's where they're big.
Different issue over there.
America, yeah. Whilst we're on the subject of smartphones again, Android and iOS now account for more than 80% of the US smartphone market. Everyone will be going, oh, duh, Fred, which is pretty much standard.
BlackBerry and iOS... Android and iOS between them.
Yes, yeah.
80%.
80%,
yeah.
Which basically is RIM, Microsoft, and Symbian are the other three outsiders there.
Yep.
But yeah, Google is, as of February 12, the Google organization accounts for 50.1% of all smartphones in the United States, and Apple accounts for 30.2%. So, you know, it's growing.
The 50.1% sounds like it was approved by a competition regulator.
It does, doesn't it? Doesn't it? Anyway, further to those stats, RIM has 13.4%, Microsoft has 3.9%. Speaks volumes for Windows Phone, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it speaking volumes for the fact that there's not much out there with Windows Phone on it?
I've never seen a Windows Phone in the wild.
I saw a second one. Brian had one.
Brian had one. Apart from Brian. Yeah. Apart from the one I saw, I've never seen one.
I did come across...
Listen to what you say, man.
I did come across another person here at the radio station the other day who actually has Windows Phone 7 on a device.
Were they happy with it?
No. So, anyway, and Symbian, which is the
Windows Phone 7 is the Nokia of phone operating systems.
Ah, there it is.
Hello.
We got him.
Bazinga.
We say that joke, and he's the first one to scoff, and now we've got him.
Yes. All right.
Welcome down to our level.
Thank you.
And Symbian comes in down the bottom, obviously, with market share of...
nothing.
Of... Close. Yeah, it doesn't count. 1.5%.
Whoever's still got one, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But Symbian was good in its day. Nokia tried. No, actually, you're right. I agree
obviously
with you. It
not.
Wasn't
no.
good in its day.
Standard now.
It was widespread in its day.
Yeah, that's probably the way to do it.
But it was the reason that my last Nokia phone, that I didn't get another Nokia phone afterwards, got defenestrated.
Ooh. What's that mean?
Got thrown through a window.
Defenestrated.
Is it right, Greg?
Got thrown out a window, yes. Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know that was a word.
See, stick with us.
Defenestrated.
Don't you believe us?
She's going to
definer.com or...
Hang on. We should ask Lena another thing. The other week she learned something else on the program. I'll just see if she's remembered it. What does RIM stand for?
In motion. Something.
What? Sorry, I didn't quite catch
it. The podcast just dropped out.
Research in motion?
You're well done.
Okay.
Yeah.
Woohoo, I know stuff. See, I didn't know that was a word, but I still spelled it right. No,
yes.
I didn't. I gave it a PH instead of an F.
Oh, no.
Oh, close.
Same route as the French for window, if you remember your French from year 7.
La fenêtre.
That's the one.
Mm.
Oh, do you speak French?
Non.
No. No.
No.
Dear, it's funny. We should bring this back to a technically related thing. Adam Turner has a view from the couch, as he normally does.
Who is this Adam Turner of which you speak?
Adam Turner, legendary tech journalist.
Yeah. One of Australia's leading tech journalists.
Yeah, he makes the effort to come in when others just flit around the countryside saying, I'm on vacation.
Oh, I did that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I'm on a train.
I'm on a train. What? Mowing the lawn on a train.
Yeah, that's it. Mowing the lawn. Yeah. No, yeah. You were sitting there watching grass, trees grow at Catherine Railway Station.
I was.
For 4.5 hours.
Yeah, I did.
Didn't get off. It's too hot. Am I getting off?
It's way too hot.
Yeah. In the meanwhile, Adam's been doing some wonderful productive work, and this week is no exception. He's going to talk about ripping DVDs and the legalities thereof.
Oh.
Who rips DVDs in this room?
No one.
Because it's defeating copy protection, which is illegal.
No.
Yeah, but do you know
it's
anyone?
It's not allegedly illegal. It is illegal.
I'm just saying allegedly because it's a really good legal term.
It is.
Yeah.
When you use it properly.
Yeah. Well, everything's allegedly. It covers your bottom.
Thanks, Lena. Well said, Lena.
Yeah. Anyway, it is illegal to do it. But there is room for change.
It's not illegal to back up your DVDs, but it is illegal to defeat the copy protection in order to do so.
Correct. But you go figure this. You can go and buy a CD from the music shop. You can make copies of that legally for your own private use. The same rules apply.
But you're not defeating
copy protection on a CD, though.
You're allowed to back it up, and you're not allowed to defeat copy protection. If the CD isn't copy protected, then you're fine.
But if the DVD is copy protected...
Which most of them are, then you're not fine. You're not allowed to defeat that copy protection.
I'll now ask this question to Lena because this question doesn't apply to you, Graeme. How do your kids handle DVDs? Do they fling them across the floor?
I have one kid.
Do you use them... Yes.
We put everything on the Apple TV so he doesn't have to handle CDs.
So do you get the DVD and move it across onto the Apple TV?
I do.
Yeah. See? That's what I'm talking about. We do that
too. It's my data. I'll do whatever I want with it.
Yeah.
Tell you a story. Walking...
Yeah.
We try and put everything digital.
If you have young fingers, they can absolutely destroy an optical disc just by looking at them.
It's like something out of a horror movie.
It is. But anyway, Adam has a view.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
When will Australian copyright law finally let me format shift movies as well as music? When MP3 players first went on sale in Australia, the only way you could get your own music onto them was to break the law and copy your CDs to your computer. Of course, we did it anyway, and the long arm of the law didn't tap people on the shoulder because we all knew the law was a joke. It's little wonder people have such scant regard for other copyright restrictions. Then, 5 years ago, Australian copyright law finally came into the digital age and permitted you to rip CDs and record TV shows, even though we'd been doing these things for years. Yet it stopped short of permitting DVD ripping, promising to reassess the situation later. It's a frustrating distinction considering it's all just ones and zeros, but you can be sure there was a lot of powerful lobbying behind the scenes. Now, most people rip their DVDs for the same reason they rip their CDs, to protect the original and to enjoy the content on other devices. If you've seen what kids and their grubby fingers can do to an expensive DVD, you'll understand why people create a DVD jukebox and put away the originals for safekeeping. It's easy to rip your DVDs with software such as AnyDVD and watch them on a Media Center PC or a media player. Sure, you're breaking copyright law, but everyone seems content to look the other way. Of course, these things are further complicated by our free trade agreement with the US, which saw Australia inherit all the worst bits of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. In a nutshell, we're permitted to back up DVDs, but we're not permitted to break the encryption on commercial DVDs, which is required to back them up. It's a classic catch-22 situation. It's like telling someone they can watch a DVD, but they're not allowed to take it out of the case. Even the parliamentary report on this issue describes it as a lamentable and inexcusable flaw that verges on absurdity. Now, we were promised there'd be a review of the law in a few years, and it's about to get underway, with the Attorney General's Department issuing draft terms of reference. Submissions close on April 27, and we should get the report back by November 30, 2013. Chances are the review will pay more attention to online issues, such as the clash between Optus and the AFL over broadcast rights and online time shifting. But the review also needs to address the absurdity of the Catch-22 laws regarding ripping DVDs.
The scope of the reference includes a review of exceptions in relation to technical protection measures, which should cover this DVD issue. But I wouldn't be surprised if they put it in the too hard basket and ignore it, because it's just easier to give in to the demands of powerful copyright lobby groups rather than stand up for our rights. You probably won't even hear much public debate about the DVD ripping issue, because everyone who does it knows the law is a joke, just like the old laws regarding ripping CDs. If Australian lawmakers are content to keep absurd laws on the books, it's little wonder the law can't get no respect.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Respect.
Respect, yeah, the law can't, car.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, let's see what happens with DVDs in the next little bit, shall we? Because I think everyone does it anyway.
So hypothetically, if I go and buy a DVD...
A hypothetical DVD?
Yeah. And then I hypothetically download a really good rip of it, just so I don't have to sit through 7 minutes of anti-piracy information on the version I've purchased.
Do they still have that?
Oh,
my conscience would be clear if I did that.
You wouldn't steal a car or a handbag or something. Would you steal a movie?
No, but I'd download... I'd download a car
if I could.
Yep.
Yeah.
If it didn't hurt anyone, it was a direct copy, I would download a car.
Yeah.
Yep.
A Volvo?
Yes, actually. I do like Volvos.
Oh, good. I'm pleased.
I want an XC90. They're very nice cars.
Do you?
Yeah. Send me one if you're listening.
All right.
Didn't the makers of that You Wouldn't Steal a Car thing steal the music for that ad?
They did.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, good. Just to
just
be
wanted to clarify that. All right. It's time for us to head to the water fountain. We'll be back with more after this.
You're listening.
What does this button do? Hello, everybody.
But I buck the trend on the hive mind that is Tech Talk Radio.
Which is patently absurd.
It is absurd, exactly right.
But anyway, my point is...
Moving along.
My point is...
And why do you have to change the phone number?
That's a good question, Dr. Ron. Why?
If they're that clueless, they should not be answering the phone.
I can't see a blue tin. I can't see a blue tin.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Hey, OLED monitors are coming out very shortly in the domestic side of things. You know the big tellies you can now buy at home? You get a 50-inch OLED monitor, an organic light-emitting diode monitor.
Oh, yes.
These are fairly cool.
These are the true LED televisions, not the ones that everybody and his dog is selling at the moment, calling them LED televisions when they're not.
No, they're not, indeed. Oh, sorry.
Hey, look, Graham's upset about a technicality. Ow! Ow!
That was assault. I saw that.
I saw that too.
Allegedly. Yeah.
Allegedly.
Hand her over the back of the head there. Anyway, Samsung to showcase one of their new OLED HD TVs very shortly now. Great contrast ratio with these things.
Yes.
Very, very thin, wafer thin, very good economically on the electricity. Yep.
Yes. The big thing about these, at the moment, all the current technologies, the LCD ones, which even when they say they're LED ones, they're an LED backlight with an LCD in front of it. Yep. What they have is a very bright black backlight, which is white, and then it shines through the LCD, which then either colours it or blacks it out to make the picture. So it's like a slide projector. It needs a big bright light behind it to work.
Yep.
So it's inefficient. So if you've got a mostly black screen, you've got this big white light, and all it's doing is making the thing hot. It's none of it's getting out to you. So the OLED is different in that the actual active part of the screen that creates the image is the light-emitting part of the screen. So if it wants green, it makes a green light. It doesn't modify a white light to make it green.
Mm.
So it's
so very vivid colours?
Much more efficient. Yeah, and yes, very vivid colours, very blacks, because, of course, when it's black, it's just off. There's no light there behind it that's trying to block.
Best contrast you can get,
yes.
Really.
Yes.
Does not glow.
Expect them in August, Samsung says.
Oh, yeah. I'm quite looking forward to them. In a professional environment, we've got them already, and they are just the best monitors to actually look at television pictures on.
Yeah, there's no reason.
Don't watch free-to-air on it. You're wasting your money. Stick with your normal.
There's no reason why these shouldn't be really, really good looking.
Yeah,
sets.
What I said was a bit silly there. No, they're really good sets. Great for Blu-ray. Ooh, really good quality for those big movies and stuff like that.
Yep.
So, well worth considering one of those if you're sitting on the fence waiting for new technology to come along with tellies. It's about to happen. Don't get it from Sony though. Poor old Sony going from bad to worse at the moment.
What's happened to
Sony?
Are
you about to steal one of my stories? I think you might be.
No, I'm going to miss that bit. I'm going to talk about that bit and that bit.
No, that was mine. All right.
What do you mean? Well, I was going to say Sony's going to shed 10,000 jobs,
yep.
Which is a massive. Imagine if that happened in a company here in Australia. There would be hue and cry about it, really. It would be all over Red Rover for someone. And Sony are going to do the same thing, basically because of the fact that the yen and the dollar and the pound and all the dollars are making it really hard for Japan at the moment. I somehow also think that they took a bit of a whack with the tsunami that went through some of their manufacturing plants not so long ago.
Yeah, yep.
Which probably also didn't help.
And the hack.
And the hack, yeah, yeah. But also the television market is becoming really cutthroat. Have you noticed how cheap TVs are becoming? And I don't know whether it's just here, but I'm sure it's a global trend. But the tellies, like the Bravias of yesteryear, when they first came onto the market, were in the, you know, $3,000 and $4,000 areas. And now they're all down to the sub twos, if not a little less.
Under a grand.
Yeah. Yeah. So obviously there's not a huge amount. Obviously the technology is maturing a little bit, but... Sony are actually going to wind back their TV production by around 40% by 2013.
Yeah, which is a shame. It means people are buying a lot of cheap, crummy TVs. The thing with TVs, though, is that there is a huge difference in quality between the TVs that are around at the moment. So a cheap TV isn't necessarily a cheap TV.
Yeah, you know, not cheap and
still,
nasty.
You still need to make sure that what you're getting is a quality TV. And you can get quality TVs for reasonable prices now, too.
Yep. And a lot of their competitors are producing screens that are pretty amazing, too. You know, the Samsungs and the LGs and all that sort of stuff, traditionally were never really thought of as the really great scenes, and now actually got quite a lot of respect in the marketplace, I've found. So
the Sonics don't look too bad. Sonic.
Here's Lena with games.
Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
So, Sony are expecting a really big loss.
Yeah, they are.
They're going to.
That's all right, but you buy Sony television.
Are they going to X jobs?
Yes.
Really?
10,000 of them.
10,000
jobs from Sony? That's going to hurt.
Which is an estimated 6% of its workforce.
Would you like your Andrew handing over the copy?
Read the middle bit, okay? I'll lift that bit for you.
It was mine and you nicked it.
You heard it here first in Lena's game segment.
Yeah. They're taking a net loss of $6.4 billion. That's their projected net loss that they'll be taking for the full year compared to its previously announced forecast of $2.7 billion. That's big. Very big.
That's massive. I don't know.
You know, we were talking about Sony because they have the a lot of other technologies like TVs and that sort of stuff. But they also have a massive investment in games with the PlayStation platform, the PlayStation 3.
Now, what's happening
they
there?
They do, and it's only going to get bigger. Their involvement in games, yeah.
So they're shrinking everywhere else, but the game section is not part of what's losing the 10,000 jobs.
No, they're going through a big restructuring plan, and they plan to improve profits by introducing One Sony, an initiative that will focus Sony's efforts on its three core business units. So one of them's gaming. Digital imaging.
So three Sonys, really, not one.
So three Sonys, yeah, not one Sony at all. Digital imaging, games, and mobile.
Digital imaging meaning cameras?
Yes. So they'll still do their cameras.
Yep.
They'll still do their games.
Yep.
And they'll focus on mobile. I don't know why.
Well, they've split up with Ericsson. They send a nasty letter to each other.
So who will they be partnering up with then?
No one, possibly.
Will be making the phone component of their phones.
They must be, which would be nice. Their plans to generate about 70% of the total sales and 85% of the operating income from those business sectors by fiscal 2014.
Didn't Sony make handsets before the Sony Ericsson partnership began?
No, Ericsson made handsets before Sony
Ericsson. Oh, that's right. I remember the Ericsson. Yeah, that's
Sony got on board.
Yeah, and the idea
was they amalgamated an MP3 player in it, and Sony put their name on it.
You put a Walkman in a Sony Walkman in an Ericsson phone, and you end up with a Sony Ericsson smartphone. That was the idea.
Thailand Tommy just said on the chat that the Sony factory was washed away in Thailand in the October floods,
along with the Western Digital factory too. That's back online now too, and the drive prices have come back down too, which is great.
The Apple CEO. Apple's one of my favorite things, and Valve is one of my favorite things. The CEO went to Valve headquarters.
Really?
And everyone's lost their mind.
Why?
Because everyone's like, why? Why is the CEO of Apple going to the to Valve HQ to meet the CEO of Valve?
Oh, they're what
are they
up
to?
Maybe Valve is going to buy Apple.
No, I don't think so.
Or I don't think anyone's got deep enough pockets, not even a government, to buy Apple.
No.
So, yes, Mr. Cook?
Mr. Tim Cook went to spend some time at the Half-Life and Portal studio in Bellevue, Washington today. Not today. That was a few days ago.
You sure they weren't just old mates from college and they're going out to lunch?
Well, most likely. We're rich businessmen. Let's hang out. But there's been no comment from Valve or Apple on the matter, which is only fueling...
Yeah, Apple never comment on anything ever.
What's the matter? Just that they were seen together?
That he had a meeting and he went to Valve. And everyone has lost their minds.
And that's all we know.
That's all we know.
Yeah, I'm with Gray and they're probably just having lunch.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, right.
The report didn't indicate any specific purpose to the visit.
They went to school together in a past life.
As of press time, neither Valve nor Apple had responded to GameSpot's request for comment. This is an article from GameSpot. Valve's present partnership with Apple is limited to the digital distribution hub Steam being available on Mac computers. And there's a Steam iPhone app as well, which was released in January. I think that's fairly limited, though. That's more, I think you can chat on there, buy games on there, but not actually play games on there. So it's like a little portal for Steam. In March, rumors emerged that Valve was working on hardware of its own. So people are putting that together with this. Although they did say they're not expecting to do anything with that. Today, job listings at Valve were spotted.
Yeah, they actually came out and said that they were just developing hardware for in-house use.
They weren't actually going to make anything with it, which when people heard about it, they lost their minds again.
Yeah.
Because this is what happens when Valve do anything. People lose their minds and they finally think we're going to get Half-Life 3. we're not. Valve was spotted putting out job listings for calling for people, quote, to invent whole new gaming experiences and research compelling new hardware technologies. So everyone's losing their minds because they think Apple and Valve are going to join
together
to do
something. Including the people who write the ads who appear to have lost all grasp on the English language.
Yes. Yes, they have. so people are having a bit of a little... Oh, I can't say that on the radio. They're losing their minds over what this might mean for...
Are you looking for the word meltdown, maybe?
Meltdown? Yeah, that might be it. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
So look forward to Steam being a component of iTunes at some point in the future.
Oh, I wish. I wish it was part of the Mac App Store. But I think it's mainly just because...
No one else wishes that, by the way, just so you know.
No, the desktop App Store.
Yeah, you'll download iTunes and QuickTime in order to access the Steam...
That would not be what would happen.
That'll be, and you'll have to buy when you can buy what's a Half-Life 3?
Mm-hmm.
You'll have to buy it through iTunes.
No, the Mac App Store and iTunes, they're not the same thing. Oh dear. No, it wasn't a bazinga. He's wrong. He's just flat out wrong, and he needs to use Macs if he's going to say those things because he doesn't know what he's saying. Anyway, on a lighter note, he's upset now.
You can tell when Graham gets... See, you can't see this at home listening on the radio, but Graham has kicked back. He's moved
taking
his headphones off and he's rolled back in the studio several metres away from the microphone.
The radio equivalent of taking his bat and his ball and he's gone home. on a nicer note, a 10-year-old has made a game for his blind grandmother. Come on, Graham, come back. That's nice.
That's nice. That's a nice feel-good story.
Fifth grader Dylan Vial... Viale, I don't know how to say your name, Dylan, my apologies, has a blind grandmother. So the 10-year-old made her a game that uses audio cues only. He attends Hidden Valley Elementary School in Martinez, California, and he figured out how to make a game by using the free starter version of design app Game Maker. So it's an
Should
app
we know
called
this?
Game Maker.
Oh, it's an Apple app, is it?
No, I don't think it is. I think it's PC and Mac. I think it's desktop,
so it's a
computer.
Cross-platform thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
He's part of a growing number of fans who are taking matters into their own hands and using simple tools to create their own video games. There was another one that was made by... Oh, I can't remember who it is now. There's a few out there like that kids are making games with these amazing apps. his grandmother Sherry's been blind for decades, but Dylan wanted to share his favourite pastime with her, so he made Quacky's Quest, a game where you play a duck, which is actually based on a cartoon that Dylan's father created when he was a kid.
Wow.
So this is a three-generational
thing. Full circle, hasn't it?
As Quacky, you weave through a series of mazes to find a golden egg, and sound cues help you find your way. You pick up gems, and when you do, you hear a cash register ka-ching sound. If you hit a wall, you hear a deep, unpleasant noise that I imagine sounds a lot like when you do something the TiVo doesn't like, because that's the most unpleasant noise there is.
Really? I don't have one.
Oh, it goes bong every time you do like the littlest thing wrong. You try and go up when there's no option to go up, and it goes bong and makes you feel like an idiot. I hate it. It's the worst noise ever. But I digress. If you go the wrong way down a passage, you hear spider noises. So, Graham, you might not like this one. If you go
spider noise, what noise is a spider make?
I don't know. Like, I guess, like creepy little walking, kind of like the pads of their feet or something like that.
Yeah, you hear that often.
Spiders have feet, right? Yeah, I don't know.
Eight of them, apparently.
Yeah. If you go too far down the passage, you set off dynamite. Dylan needed assistance with the game. And looked on the Game Maker message boards for help and figured out how to prevent his grandmother from getting lost. As her duck travelled between passages, boulders dropped too close to where she'd already been, so that sort of closed off where... Sorry, to close off where she'd already been, so she couldn't accidentally backtrack. After a month, Dylan finished the game and entered it in his school science fair. He won first place.
Well done, Dylan.
He was in the top three.
It was in the top three.
Good on you, Dylan. That's great. Can we download the game or have a look at the game? Do you know?
I didn't see a link on the article that I found, but I'm going to have a look now and see if we can. It's called Quacky's Quest.
So it'd be cool if you could download it.
It's probably on the App Store.
Cool. Maybe.
Let's have a look. Quacky's Quest. Yeah. This is great for radio. No, it's all articles that I can see on there. I can't see.
Oh, someone will tell us. They'll be on the chat or
something.
I'll
have a good look, and if it is, I'll put it up on the forum.
Speaking of the chat, they've gone freaks just let loose with a barrage of Graham, you're right, taunts.
Did you say the freaks?
Graham's an EME, by the way, if you want to
write. Freak is his username.
Freak is a username, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. Okay, good.
Freak gig. So, interesting. It's on for young and old. But anyway, Instagram. Are you done, Lena? You got anything else for us?
That's everything. I thought I'd like to end on that nice note of Dylan making a game for his grandma.
And you brought Graham back to the panel too. I think that's sweet.
Games bring people together, see? Apple hate does not.
Now the looks are in the studio again.
If looks could kill.
Instagram, which was recently purchased by a said Facebook company for $1 billion.
They could have just downloaded it for free.
Yeah.
From the App Store. Did you do that joke last week?
Yeah, sorry, we did that last week.
Okay, keep going.
I'm thinking of Austin Powers and Mini-Me going, how much? $1 million.
$1 million.
This is no. Things have changed. $1 billion. Anyway, Instagram. I'm going to have to close my Instagram account.
Because now
I own by Facebook and their privacy policies will take off, which means we share the love. Everything you know about them, they'll sell for their... passing on to everybody, and that's just my gross generalization about it. But seriously, as these companies buy it, do they get the right to consume it and apply their privacy policies onto it and make it assimilate into the Borg, I guess, is the question?
Are they going to have some absurd condition in the privacy policy that says we own everything you upload?
Yeah.
Is that what you're worried about?
I just don't want anything to do with, who was it the
Mr.
other...
Mr. Zuckerberg.
There was an example, I think, in the office. That, I can't remember if it was you, Dr. Ron, or whether it might have been Brian or something like that. Oh, that's right, because Brian is tying the knot. And somehow or other, something got online, and the next time he did a search online, up came advertising related to...
To weddings.
To weddings.
Really?
Yeah.
Just from one Google search or one something.
Yeah, something like that. So, But it just goes
It'll do it. It's all it takes.
Yep. All it takes. But anyway,
just
you can actually...
the Herald Sun. You've got to be careful about what Google get to see.
Well, what happened? I haven't heard this.
Haven't you?
No, what happened with the Herald Sun? What did Google see that the Herald Sun wouldn't want Google to see?
A certain winner of a certain award.
Oh, is this the Logies that we had here in Melbourne last night? The Logie. Yeah, we had a game. It's just the most amazing thing. You don't want to know about it, but it's an award show for TV. What happened, Graham?
Well, apparently... someone at the Herald Sun had an embargoed list of winners so they could have their stories all ready to publish. And one of the pages that was supposed to have been embargoed, the Google crawler found. And so...
Oh, you're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, because...
So the embargo list was indexed.
Yeah, because someone at the Herald Sun can't get their heads around robots.txt, which is the thing that's supposed to prevent that sort of thing from happening.
I hadn't heard that.
The winner was available from the Herald Sun via Google, some hours before it was supposed to have been.
Really?
Yeah, and there's been all this back and forth about who was, the Herald Sun said, oh, Google shouldn't have published this, rah, 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 but of course that's absolute nonsense, because if it was on their website and the crawler could find it, then the crawler could find it, and it shouldn't have been.
Yeah. That's funny.
So, yeah.
So I pay no attention to that telecast, and as a result, I...
Couldn't be less interested.
Yeah, I just stumbled across it last night, and that was probably about it. I didn't... Normally, you can tell when it comes to life on Twitter, but I don't even think the celebrities tweet anymore from there because...
It's banned. No,
they all get into too much trouble, yeah.
Yeah, they're all... They moved over to Vodafone or something, I think the rumour was last year, so it takes 3 days for the tweet to come out, so...
That's not true.
I'm just repeating what I've heard.
Oh, it's a cruel man.
No, they're all afraid of winding up on Media Watch next week, so...
Are they?
Yeah, which, as we know, happens from time to time when you send out an indiscreet tweet. Sorry to anyone who's
contributes to the program.
Near and dear to the program. Yeah. You did well, actually. I've never had the Tech Talk Radio logo on Media Watch, but thanks.
That was good,
You did so well. Hey, US carriers are debating... actually, they're not debating anything. US carriers are creating a database to fight phone theft. Now, we should have this here, shouldn't we? If someone nicks your mobile phone, you have a unique identifier.
We do.
And you can... See who owns it.
We do.
Yep.
So law enforcement agencies do.
This should have been done decades ago.
Now, the US are doing. Carriers representing 90% of US subscribers will announce the creation of the said database with the unique mobile phone IDs, so that if people nick things, they can, when it gets to be re-registered or something like that, I'm assuming that's what happens, or put a SIM card in it. The IMEI number comes up, and people go, oh, that's Graham's phone.
All the phone networks for decades have been claiming that this was technically too hard to do and rah, 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 which is absolute crud and nonsense. And
where is this happening, Andrew?
In the US. This is Verizon Wireless, AT&T, Sprint, and T-Mobile are all sharing the database in the US now for stolen mobile phones.
That's good. You're sorry to interrupt, Graham. Yeah, it happens here. We have a database here, and all the carriers subscribe to it.
Oh, so, we do that
it's been
here.
Around for years. Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, yes, yes.
I didn't think we had it, but obviously we do, so I'll move on.
Yep. No, but what Graham's saying is perfectly correct. Like, in the United States, why they haven't had it for the last 15 years, I'll never know.
Ah.
We didn't have it for a long time, did we? When you say it's been around for years, it hasn't been around since the beginning.
2003 or 2004 or something.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's been stealth. I didn't think we had it. But obviously, so someone nicks your phone. Say if I nick your phone and go and put a SIM in it, Dr. Ron, a prepaid SIM in it.
Yes.
Then the carriers flag it and they say, hey, Andrew's got your phone.
We're not. The carriers will say, we're not going to give you service on our network because the handset that you are using is stolen. It's reported stolen.
Oh, okay. But they don't take it any further than that? They just refuse access to the network?
Probably can't they don't tell you too much more about that. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, so you don't know. All right, fair enough. We won't go any further.
Not that I don't know, but I can't tell you too much more. I'm sorry.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Allegedly.
Thanks, Lena.
Thanks.
No,
there's the word allegedly. So
stand by.
Standing by.
All right. Now, just before we go to the Oddspot gadget and website of the week, Nokia came out during the course of the week and said that multi-core phones are a waste of time and batteries. What about this?
Is that Nokia?
What?
Yeah.
That's great.
Multi-core phones are just a waste of battery. Single-core is the best in the real world, according to Nokia.
Cognitive dissonance at its finest.
Nokia CEO Stephen Elop has a claim that dual-core and quad-core phones are not helping consumers.
He should elop out of here.
Speaking in, this is not the Oddspot, but nonetheless, he should elop out of here. Speaking in an interview in a Chinese newspaper, because that's where he does his best work, Elop highlighted Elop highlighted that many multi-core handsets suffer from battery issues. Yeah, well, sure, they draw a bit more on
the
battery.
How's the reality distortion field over at Nokia? That's ridiculous.
Cognitive dissonance, I reckon.
Ah, dear. Yeah, well, you got to make...
The multi-cores are not even any good anyway.
So, stick with us and we'll give you a free snake on every mobile phone.
Because we have one core. So that's all you need.
Ah, dear. If nothing else, it's a laugh.
Listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
The Big T announced its prices for the national broadband network.
And that's a risk you have to be aware of and you have to be prepared to take.
So you've unnecessarily highlighted that awkward part of the conversation.
DLC stands for downloadable content.
Yeah, that's what it gives you if you've already got the toolbar.
I want a portal gun.
Telstra need to take more safeguards so that one piece of equipment can't take down a network.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Thank you, GD, for this week's suggestion. The Gadget of the Week is the Canon EOS 60DA digital camera for astronomers.
So cool.
Engadget says, what if you had a camera engineered specifically to capture the beauty of the night sky? Now you do. The Canon EOS 60DA caters to astronomers and hobbyists who'd rather spend their clicks on galaxies than flowers and earthlings. According to Canon, there's a modified infrared filter and a low-noise sensor with heightened hydrogen alpha sensitivity, something that presumably means the world to astronomers. In more understandable terms, it's packing an 18-megapixel CMOS sensor, a 3-inch Clearview LCD, a 9-point autofocus system, and TV out support. The silent shooting feature that we already praised, says Engadget, in the 5D Mark III is here as well, as is a native ISO ceiling of 6,400 and an expandable range that reaches 12,800.
Yeah, they can see in the dark, these cameras.
That's amazing.
I did some photography down whilst I was on a break down Sorrento, which is the harbour side or bayside sort of place here in Melbourne where the ferry comes in, go across the heads. And I was using a 7D, and it could see better than I could in the dark. You know, the ferry was aglow, and you read everything, see the right colours and stuff, and yet it was pitch black out there. So they're great cameras.
That's amazing. The basic little digital SLR that I've got, which is also a Canon, I think that does ISO up to 1200 or something.
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
Yeah.
This does 12,800.
Yeah.
Expect it to hit dealers later this month for around about $1,500. The Gadget of the Week, Andrew, the Canon EOS 60DA.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
www.auber.com. A-W-E-B-E-R. A-W-E-B-E-R. Auber.com. It's an email marketing website. It's a little bit like MailChimp.
Oh, spammer.
Which was our website a few months ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're a budding email spammer. Auber's email marketing tools, or AWeber. Maybe it's AWeber. Is that how you pronounce it? Professional email sign-up forms, autoresponder services make it easy for you to build your email list and stay in touch with sales prospects. Features include email networks, stylish sign-up forms, autoresponders, RSS to email, email tracking, integration with social networks, and much, much more. It's a paid service, but you can sign up for just $1 to see how it all works.
Sign up for a dollar. So it does cost you to actually send. There's no free portion of it.
Correct.
Okay.
Sign up for a dollar. But that's our website, Andrew. It's AWeber or Auber, depends on how you pronounce it, AWEBER.com.
Tech Talk Radio, app of the week.
And this week we've got an app that's not for the iPhone. And it's not for the Android phone.
Symbian.
It's not for Symbian.
Windows.
It's for Windows.
Windows ME?
Windows XP. Windows
oh, damn,
7.
It's a Lena real could, Windows. Lena Windows, could use it on a computer that she's got, her last Windows computer she owned.
It's a real...
I still have it somewhere.
Desktop application.
It's a real desktop application. It's called SharePod.
Oh, yeah.
SharePod. And what it does is it gets you around all those limitations that annoy you so much in iTunes. So
I like the sound of this.
Where you've got a track on your iPod, it'll be able to copy that from the iPod to your computer, which iTunes won't do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It'll allow you to do all types of management of your iPod. It'll allow you to put songs on, take songs off, you know, play with playlists. Basically manage your iPod without iTunes.
Gee, that's got to be good.
It's a really good little app. It's free.
It would help you back up your iPod, too, when you go, oh, goodness.
Yep, it can certainly get you out of trouble with backing up your iPod if you've got problems with it. Yep, you can back up at least back up all your music tracks nice and easily.
Mm-hmm.
It's free, and one of the best features of it is it can be installed in a portable way, so you can actually install it on your iPod's hard disk. And then you can plug into any computer, even if SharePod hasn't been installed on that computer, and you can run SharePod off your actual iPod's hard disk.
Wow.
To access its own library.
Gee whiz. Isn't that great?
Yep, it's a really good little application.
So where do we get this from?
www.getsharepod.com.
Okay, and does it cost anything, or is it a free download?
Free.
And what operating systems does it support?
Supports the various Windowses.
Oh, so it's really a Windows thing, is it?
Let me go to the download page and just double check. Yeah, it's definitely a Windowsy application.
I'm going to download that when I get home tonight.
Yep,
and try it out.
And it even
does
supports,
it work on an iPhone?
Yeah, it does. It didn't used to, but it now does support the iPhone and iPod Touch.
Oh, good. So it covers all genres of your Apple Music.
Yep.
Thingamy bobs.
Yep.
Oh, good.
Really good little little application that can get you out of trouble if you're trying to do something that you can't do in another way.
Okay. So where do I go again? One more time?
www.getsharepod.com.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf!
Bob. James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Did you miss me? Miss my Odd Spots?
Yes. I no. had to read them and I can't read. I've been hiding that all this time.
See, it's not that she's missed the Odd Spot. She's missed you reading the Odd Spot.
Here at TikTok Radio, we've always extolled the virtues of monitoring your credit card statements, credit card security, keeping your credit cards in view at all times. Don't let shop assistants disappear with your credit cards and so on and so forth. A fraudster's credit card plot was foiled by a Pennsylvanian shop clerk who noticed her own mother's name on a credit card.
Oh, spooky.
What? What are the chances?
Authorities say 19-year-old Joshua Devonshire fled, but was spotted later, apparently trying to put the stolen card back into the clerk's mother's car from whence it was stolen. He was eventually taken into custody. Investigators say they recovered several suspected stolen items from the car.
Wow.
That's a bit freaky, isn't
That's
it?
That's spooky.
Yeah.
Just the name. That'd...
Yeah.
Just seeing your name, seeing your family name on the credit card, going, hang on, I think that's my mum's name. Are you supposed to have my mum's credit card?
No, are you my mother?
Are you my mother?
Mommy?
Are you my mummy? That's our Odd Spot, Andrew.
Well, that's our show. Welcome back, Dr. Ron. We've missed you. It's great
having
you.
A lot of fun. Thanks for having
me back. Great Odd Spots back and all that sort of stuff. Thanks, Lena, for coming in.
Thank you.
Sorry I didn't mean to steal your Sony story. I stopped halfway to leave you a bit.
Thank you.
And Graham, as per normal, wealth of information.
Thanks.
That is the show, Tech Talk Radio, for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Had a good rest of the day and all that sort of stuff. And join us same time next week, same places. You know where to go. Until then, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the two-hour version or access the one-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat, and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.